Annie led them into the main house, and Ryan was surprised at the decor. Where the exterior of the house was rough, the interior showed the effects of considerable hard work. The floors were wood, but carpets covered them in places, all of them depicting outdoor nature scenes, woodlands and creatures, fish and rivers, snow-topped mountains. Looking at them, Ryan knew the influences had come from the land around the trading post. He followed the woman through a narrow hallway off the main door, set between two rooms that had large X's cut in them for blaster ports. Evidently, the woman took her security measures seriously. As they stepped into the big room, Ryan signaled to JB and had the armorer step away to the right, then signaled Jack and Dean to step to the left. By the time they stopped, they formed a half circle around Annie and her people. Some of the trading post's gunners were still behind them, but they weren't bunched up. The room was massive, filled with handmade furniture that sported overstuffed upholstery. Two of the walls held floor-to-ceiling shelves that were filled with books. A third wall was a taxidermist's dream, lined with the heads and bodies of wild game. Ryan scanned the assembled mountings, spotting bears, cougar, fish, snakes, and other muty animals that he wasn't so sure of. There were also seven human heads. Five of them had belonged to men, and two to women. All of them looked terrified. A huge fireplace occupied the fourth wall. There were no windows. Annie stopped at a large table cut from tree trunks. Smooth river stones covered the tabletop, all of it leveled off by a flawless lacquer that held a suet yellow color. She flipped a switch under the table, and electrical lights flooded the room.
"Make yourselves to home. Those that I let inside the trading post, I take pride in showing hospitality to."
Ryan took a seat on one of the three large couches in the center of the room around the big table. JB sat across from him, while Jack and Dean hung back. There were plenty of seats for Morse and his boys, Elmore and the others. While Annie poured drinks in glass jars, Doc walked straight across to the shelves.
"Madam, I must say you have quite an eclectic collection of books."
"Out here, Doc, I can't be too choosy about what I'm able to get. I take whatever I can get my hands on."
"Twain, Faulkner, King, Sheldon, and names here that I am afraid I do not recognize, and I consider myself a learned man. Have you read them all?"
"As much as I've been able. As many as caught my eye and held my attention. I'm still a working woman, and I have to put in time every day if I plan on keeping this place together."
"Have you a favorite?"
Annie gestured to one of the men to hand out drinks. The man didn't look too happy about it, and used only one hand to carry the wooden platter of drinks. The other he kept on his rifle.
"Jack London. I loved Call of the Wild, and White Fang, and most of his other works. Brilliant writer."
"Indeed he was."
"Man wrote about the way it was, and the way it is."
"This is my son. His name's Max, and he's going to make sure the business we conduct is right and fair."
Ryan glanced at the doorway as a big man doffed his fur cap and entered the room. Max carried his mother's complexion, but most of the resemblance ended there. Ryan surmised that he had to have taken the majority of his looks from his father. Max had dark hair, plastered tight against his scalp from wearing the heavy fur cap, and tied into short braids. Nearly 6.5 feet tall, he carried slabs of muscle on his broad frame. He wore leathers, all handmade, and showing scars from hard wear. Taking one of the jars of liquor, he took a deep drink without showing any of the effects of the alcohol. He kept a long-barreled .44 Magnum Colt Model 624 in his fist. A camp axe hung by a thong from his belt, balanced by three throwing knives on the other side. He wore a bow over his shoulder and twin quivers of arrows on his back. Knife handles showed from his boot tops as well. He poured some more whiskey into a glass.
"They come alone."
"Was anyone left on the boat?"
"Nope. Empty."
"Anything on it they didn't tell us about?"
"Not that I could find, but from what I saw, not all of these folks are together."
"I know about Morse and his boys."
"I watched those seven come up the hill together. They moved like a unit. Been together a long time, and in dangerous places from the look of them."
"You didn't have a reason to go on that boat."
"Dean, back off."
The boy's color remained mottled, and Ryan knew Dean had inherited more from him than a mere physical resemblance. but the anger that resided in his son would have to be tempered if he was going to get a handle on it.
It's not right, Dad! For all we know, this bastard set fire to the boat and burned it to the waterline!
We'd have seen the smoke.
The boat's still there. I didn't do nothing more than look it over.
I reserve the right, as always, to look out for my own welfare, young man. Your father knows this, and accepted it when he started up to this trading post.
Annie recognized that Annie had read the commitment he'd made to getting the necessary supplies. It put them on equal footing.
There's something else you might consider. There's a storm coming tonight.
How do you know?
I've lived here almost all my life. I know the land, and I know the weather that surrounds it. And I'm telling you now that there's a storm blowing in from the south that'll be here by nightfall.
Annie's better at predicting the weather than anyone else around here.
You're welcome to tie Junie up to the pier below, but you're also welcome to stay up here at the trading post, if you've a mind to.
I thought your guest houses were full up.
They are, but you're welcome to sleep in the barn if you'd like. It'd be better than trying to rest up out in that boat with the river running wild as it's gonna be.
Getting off the boat for the night sounds good, lover.
Ryan knew this was Christie's way of letting him know. She sensed nothing untoward about the offer. Then again, Ryan had no reason to believe that her customary powers of deduction were what they usually were.
I'll even add a little more to sweeten the pot. The guest I've got staying with me even has his personal cook with him. He's rented my rooms and access to my larder. When he heard you folks were coming, he made me promise to ask you up to the table if you stopped by.
Oh, dear lady, I should think we would be delighted to join you. What say you, friend Ryan?
Sounds okay. But I want some idea of how much Jack you're going to charge us before I accept your hospitality.
A practical man, Ryan Carter.
Always want to know if I can carry the freight before I heft it to my shoulder.
I give you my word that the price you'll pay for the experience won't be anything you can't live with. And I can vouch for the cook. He's been in my kitchen for the last 9 days. There are horse troughs out in the barn. Got a hand pump out there, too. And a fireplace you can use to heat up water for baths. We get our water from an underground stream, not that shit out in the river. So you don't have to worry about diseases. It's drinkable without purification or any fear of contaminants. There's tack you can use for bedrolls.
When do we get to look at the supplies?
If you want to do it now, Max will take you.
I'd like to see what I'm getting.
Let's go.
JB, you come with me. The rest of you get down to the barn. We'll be along in a few minutes.
Oh, Doc, I was wondering if you might spend a few minutes more with me.
I fear I really do not like shirking the work my fellow companions must be about in the barn.
It's okay, Doc. We'll get things ready.
Well, if you are sure...
I'm sure. We're ready, Max.
Ryan and JB followed Max deeper into the huge house along another corridor. Ryan marked two lefts. They found themselves in another windowless large room. Three big tables occupied the center of the room, surrounded by wooden stools that didn't look at all comfortable.
Have a seat. I'll bring out some of the merchandise, give you a chance to look it over.
Ryan and JB sat while the big man walked over to the door of an adjoining room and fitted a key into the lock. He let himself inside without looking back.
Got one guest staying in both guest houses.
Heard that.
Brought his own cook. Must be a hell of a fucking guest.
Some of those blasters facing us off when we stepped through the palisade doors were sec men.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing. The way they carry themselves. Gonna be an interesting night.
If we stay, we don't have to do that.
Play it as the hand is laid out. If a storm is coming, the safest place for that boat is in some kind of harbor. That dock down below might not be much, but it's deep enough to keep the boat together if the water gets rough.
Mildred took charge of the group back in the barn. She assigned Jack to watch Elmore, and she let the Heimdall Foundation man know he was on a short leash. Elmore wasn't happy about it, but he didn't try to slip off either. The barn stood nearly 20 feet tall, a big spacious building with a hayloft overhead. Stalls held 8 horses with room for 4 more. Tack and saddles covered one wall, hanging from hooks. Loose straw lay over the hard-packed earth. The ferret-faced man who'd guided them to the barn turned to them.
Comfortable place. Tight and dry during the rainy season. Spent many a night here myself.
You're not one of the guests Annie's got right now, are you?
No, I'm one of Annie's regulars. Do my scavenging and trading with her because she's fair to me. When times get lean, and they do often enough in a cold season, she stakes me. Lets me stay in a barn if I got no other place.
Where are you spending the night tonight?
Mildred didn't relish the idea of a bunch of strangers camping out among them. It was bad enough having Morse and his boys, and what remained of the ex-prisoners of the Coldhearts around them.
Outside. Got a tent, and Annie's given me my meals for a few days.
Is that normal?
Look, Annie's done me enough favors. I don't kick much when she asks me for one. You know where you're staying now, so I'm out of here.
Mildred returned her attention to the barn. Dean laid out a fire in the stone fireplace, using wood that was neatly stacked up in a lean-to 50 yards from the barn.
Hulse is used hard.
I noticed that. They're leaned out from hard travel. Coats aren't very well taken care of. Some of them move like they've got deep stone bruises in their hooves.
Horses shod, too. Probably roadwork, not open range. Used to living in a vale.
Sekmen and horses that have been pushed hard kind of leads you to think that Annie's present guest wore out his welcome somewhere else, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. Best we move early in the morning.
We'll make our own breakfast, or skip it if Ryan and JB can push the trade through tonight. Being in the middle of somebody else's trouble is the last place I want to be.
We do our own reloading where we can, but the scavengers work in the regions within trading distance around us still come across stuff like this often enough.
Max pushed boxes across to Ryan and JB. He stayed out of reach of the two, his hand never far from his gun. Ryan picked up a box of 9mm ammo and slid it open. The bullets inside stood at rigid attention, gleaming from the thin oil coat that covered them. The noses were concave, letting him know they were hollow point.
Glazers. These are some serious rounds.
Annie wanted you people to have the best.
These bullets had a rep for one shot, one kill.
I've used them. They live up to their name. I noticed you people packed 9mm rounds, and you looked like you've been traveling hard for a while.
Factory made, too.
Mm-hmm. Got pellets suspended inside in liquid Teflon. You shoot something, they can disperse inside it like a shotgun round. Tear the hell out of anything they hit. Pellets hit the bone, ricochet around, and follow the natural line of the bone until they rip out somewhere new.
It put Ryan on edge that Max and Annie were so willing to part with ammo, obviously worth so much. Max had also brought rounds for JB's shotgun. There was a mixture of flechette as well as double-aught. Again, like the 9mm rounds, they were factory perfect.
I noticed in some of the bandoliers on the Sekmen, they were carrying homegrown loads.
Yeah.
Max moved easily, transferring more boxes of ammo from the grease-stained mail pouch to the table. He returned the gaze of the two men without flinching, but Ryan knew the man had realized he'd given away the fact that part of the group had been Sekmen.
Who are they here with?
Annie will provide the introductions tonight. Here's the last of it.
Max put the last box of ammo on the table and tossed the empty mail pouch onto the table as well. Ryan ran his eye over the factory boxes. There was ammo there for all the companions' weapons, including, oddly, Doc's Lamar gun. Max had memorized all the companions' weapons in the few minutes he'd been with them. To Ryan, this was too much generosity. Something was definitely not adding up. At his side, he noted that JB already had his hand on his shotgun's grip, ready to swing it up.
Who's this guest running from?
Nobody said a word about him running from nothing.
Didn't have to. You brought us back here and start passing out ammo like it's Christmas or something. Offer us the barn and a meal tonight? That indicates to me that you people want us here.
Storm's coming.
I've been wondering about that too. I was thinking maybe we should just finish up our trading, get the fuck out of here, and take our chances with the storm.
If the storm gets too rough tonight on that flooded river, you're gonna get that boat swamped and lose it.
Maybe. But I'm wondering what we can expect to face if we stay around here.
A dry bed and a good meal. That much is certain.
Yeah. But it's the entertainment you got waiting in the wings that leaves me wondering.
Look, the deal's on the table, mister. Staying the night's part of it.
And if I choose not to stay?
Then you walk out of here the same way you walked in, and you get nothing.
JB took off his fedora and worked at the worn creases, taking time to get them as straight as possible. He worked one-handed, the hat in his lap, covering the fact that he'd raised the shotgun to waist level under the table.
If we stay, it only makes sense that we know what we're up against.
Probably nothing you ain't seen before dozens of times. Hey, tell your friend to either use that shotgun or put it down. And don't get any fancy ideas about slipping out of here in that boat. You try it, you won't clear the river in it. Me and Annie ain't made it here all these years by rolling over. I figure you know where to draw the lines, too.
I know where to draw them. I hate having them drawn for me. We can take the ammo now?
Yeah.
Then let's have a look at the rest of the supplies.
Later.
You only make some of the rules around here. Are we going to find out if JB's faster than you or not? And if we open the ball on this thing, a lot of people are going to get chilled. That's an ace on the line.
What do you want?
Some clothing? Food?
You staying?
We'll spend the night. But I'm telling you now that tonight is the end of the bargain. You try to hold us to another one, blood's going to be spilled. Now let's see some clothing.
They got everyone a change of clothing, sticking with jeans and shirts in the same colors the friends preferred. They found fatigue pants, something Mildred favored. Strangely, socks and underwear seemed to be in shortage, but Ryan and JB managed to get enough to go around. Max didn't say anything about the quantity they were taking. In fact, since their conversation over the ammo, he hadn't said much about anything. He simply sat quietly, working a whetstone across a hand axe's blade. They put their selections in plastic bags, double and triple bagging them to ensure that they didn't break and drop through.
What about the price?
You need what you got there?
Wouldn't have taken it if we didn't.
Then don't worry about the price.
Doc and Annie sat across from each other at a little table on a patio in back of the main house. A semicircle of wildflowers grew in the space provided between the wooden timbers used to make the patio and the path that led to the vegetable garden a little over 50 yards away. Doc gazed into the woman's eyes.
My favorite author, dear lady?
Yes.
That would have to be Shakespeare.
Why?
How familiar are you with his work, madam?
I've read all 37 plays. I've even got annotated versions of some of them. I'm familiar, though. I'm no expert.
Truly, I am impressed.
I like the stories he tells. But why do you like him so much?
For several reasons, actually. The stories themselves are always timely. They are about the struggle between good and evil inside men and women, about the way they relate to their families and friends and the societies that surround them. Then there's the wordplay itself. It is a marvel to see it used in the hands of a master. And Shakespeare isn't meant to be read, dear lady. It's meant to be heard. Have you ever heard it read?
I've never heard it read out loud.
Not even to yourself?
Doc, I've got a dictionary. The words I didn't understand, I looked up. But that doesn't mean I can make them sound right. And most of these lines seem like they're put together for a certain sound, kind of like a song.
Which is most true. There is a cadence in all of the Immortal Bard's works. His work was meant for the stage. Would you mind if I borrowed a volume from your library and gave a dramatic reading from it?
I wouldn't mind at all. Which play would you like?
Move not, dear lady. I know the way back to your sanctum sanctorum. I shall go get it myself and be back in but a moment. Perhaps, though, you could get us some liquid refreshment. Something cold and clear to drink. Something that will soothe the vocal cords.
Tea with honey?
That sounds divine. Now, if you'll excuse me but a moment while I fetch the volume in mind.
Doc walked back through the patio door. They'd come through the kitchen to get to the patio, but the book room was beyond that. Doc deliberately took the wrong turn at a T-juncture and snapped his sword stick open in his fists. One thing Ryan had always been insistent on was knowing as much about the terrain as was possible. Doc's detour could add to their small store of knowledge about the trading post. The corridor ran straight and true, then butted up against a locked door. Working the layout of the house in his mind, Doc knew a lot of space yet remained on the other side of the door. Glancing at the lock, he knew it would take more time than he had to get past it. He turned and retraced his steps, then went into the book room. Searching the shelves, remembering where he'd seen the Shakespeare volumes, Doc selected a hardbound edition of Macbeth that had several scars in the leather binding. He was the first to return to the table. He didn't take a seat immediately and turned his attention to the garden. Memory filed the names of the wildflowers as he stared at them. Doc turned, seeing Annie standing there with a teapot in one hand, in the other, a honey bottle and two cups held by their handles. She placed the teapot cups and honey on the table.
I was just admiring your garden.
I like the garden, but I made it where it's self-sustaining. Every year or two, I introduce something new or add a little more ground. The vegetable garden is the most important. That's where I spend most of my free time.
Doc sat down at the table across from her and took the proffered cup of tea.
Thank you, madam.
Add honey to taste. I've got some milk sub if you want.
No, thank you. You manage the garden by yourself?
No. Two families help me tend it. Planting, weeding, harvesting, and canning would keep me too busy to run the post. They get part of the harvest in exchange.
But they do not live here?
You ask a lot of questions, Doc.
That's because there is so much to ask questions about. You'll note that I have not brought up the subject of your guests.
You have now.
Touché, madam.
Our guest demands that his privacy be upheld.
I see.
Not yet, but you will tonight. In the meantime, read to me, Doc. Then we'll talk about a piece of strawberry pie I've been keeping back in the cold house in the cellar.
Act 1, Scene 1. A desert place. Thunder and lightning. Enter three witches. First witch, when shall we three meet again in thunder, lightning, or in rain?
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.